I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we're back for episode 114 of Digital Divinations.
That is very exciting. You know, you might not know this, guys, actually, but I am I'm an employee of Wizards of the Coast, and my opinions I express here, they're actually mine and not theirs.
And you can too. Ask me how.
Okay, excellent. So first, breaking news about Gen Con. I can't go now. I am bagging out. I've had to cancel. And Ron has actually helped me with this somewhat already, so he kind of knows this is happening. So 7 of the last 8 days, I've been prepping my house for sale because we're buying a new house, and we're closing at the first day of Gen Con and moving in during Gen Con. So because of that, I'm not going to Gen Con. And I will say, when I informed the Gen Con folks of that, they had told me that they were already kind of short Starfinder GMs, and a couple of other people were having to drop out. And they really wanted me to go. But I was able to get a friend of mine, Jake Reynolds, who was not going to Gen Con this year. He was all excited about next year. And I said, well, you want to go next year, especially, or you want to go this year? You can run lots of Starfinder and they'll give you a room. And he said, sure. So the Gen Con folks were happy with me because even though I had to drop out, I found a replacement that's even better than me. He's a 5 Nova GM, a VC, and all kinds of stuff. And he's easy driving distance to Bloomington. So,
So doesn't have to get on an airplane that gets potentially cloud striked or.
Yes. So he's protected against all those Microsoft weird things that could happen. That was crazy.
But yeah, I put my wife on a airplane that morning that the cloud strike kind of messed everything up. And my wife had told me, to her credit and not to mine, she had told me several days before, it's like, hey, I'm going to go visit my friend. I booked a ticket, but Alaska Airlines canceled that flight, and they moved me to a different flight that's like 20 minutes later. So I want to be at the airport at the same time. It's not going to throw up your schedule, Ron, because I had to drop her off at the airport and then go into work and get some stuff done. So it's not going to mess you up at all, Ron, but just so you know, I've been moved to a different flight. And then I forgot. Right. So I took her to the airport. I dropped her off as I'm like waiting for the traffic to clear to pull away. I happen to pull up, news on my app, and I see that all these airlines all over are getting closed. The passengers are being left and, the flights are being canceled. So I quickly look up my wife's flight number that she had texted me with her original itinerary like a month and a half ago to see that her flight has been canceled. So I call her up immediately. I'm like, oh, do I need to come back? Your flight's been canceled. She's like, no, I'm fine. I'm like, but it's big news, right? And flights are being canceled all over. And your flight is being canceled. She's like, what flight number, Rod? I'm like, it's the old one. The one that you told me was canceled several days ago. And she's like, okay, now here's my new number. And I'm like, oh, that one's on time. Okay, never mind. So I got overly concerned, not to minimize the number of people who ended up getting sort of stranded in really awkward ways. I know a couple of people who got stranded in Atlanta and had a hard time getting back and things like that. So it was a mess.
Oh, can you imagine if it happened like while everybody's en route to Gen Con? I could really
coming home from Gen Con.
Oh, boy. Worst comes to worst, I know lots of people in the Chicagoland area I could get a ride with or, drive up to and stay with.
Well, hopefully that won't happen to you, Ron, because you're going solo now.
I am. I've got a lot of friends that have reached out and was like, oh, we ought to meet. And I won't, without naming names, I have my most aggressive friend whose wife is exceptionally well connected with a lot of people throughout the whole tabletop game industry. I told him, oh, I'd like to hang out with you and your wife. But I'm not exactly sure when I'm free. I think I've got a thing, you know, the schedule's been posted for who's doing what for Dungeons and Dragons at Gen Con, but I don't know it off the top of my head, but I think I'm busy the evening you're talking about. So he's like, well, that's too bad. But then his wife, who knows some of the people at Wizards of the Coast, got back to me and said, actually, you're free. I'm like, oh, in fact, it was actually you're free. And I know somebody who's coming to the same thing that you can get a ride along with to make it as easy as possible for you. I'm like, that's wow. It's like personal concierge to a Gen Con social event. That's very nice.
Very fun. Very fun. Well, I think since Jason and I will not be going, we'll do a special episode.
We'll think of something.
Yeah, because I think it's during that whole Gen Con time that our next one's.
Well, it'll be recorded. The Sunday of, and so all the news feeds will be full of the Starfinder Second Edition rulebook, or Starfinder Second Edition playtest rulebook, and how the playtest adventures are going and all the lamentations that John Godek isn't there to run any of the,
I know,
but this Jake Reynolds did such an awesome job. Nobody missed John Godek at all.
Exactly. In fact, they probably won't want me next year because this, we got Jake, we don't need John. All right. However, there are going to be quite a few cool things coming out at Gen Con that I know, Jason, you said you were pretty excited for some things beyond Starfinder 2nd Edition playtest even.
Yeah, I mean, there's some stuff that I was just sort of thinking about other games to, you know, people could think about. Like, obviously, you know, Starfinder 2nd Edition playtest coming out, you're going to grab that, you're going to read that. But there's, you know, there's still some time, at least when this comes out, right? You've got another whole week before that happens. I was thinking about other games you could just check out and read before you are on the flight to Gen Con even. So games are out, but then I also got to think about like, oh, what's coming out at Gen Con that we could talk about as well. So, you know, for both ends of the spectrum. And one of them,
I'll mention one of them for coming out.
One of the things that is, one of the things that was, you know, we're playing Scum and Villainy, you know, Blades in the Dark, in that sort of vein. Recently, I've started a game that is called Disaster Wing, that is a mecha, teens in mechs, you know, very Gundam, stripped down a little bit, even more so than usual for Forge in the Dark style game. So we made characters that, and we started playing that, and that's been a lot of fun. So it got me thinking about other sort of like Blades in the Dark hacks. And there is a game that's nominated for several Ennies, I guess you would pronounce it Cyberpunk, but it's spelled CBR plus sign PNK. Cyberpunk. It's not something I've played or read yet, but I did watch an actual play of it, of them sort of taking that system and running a one shot in the in this sort of, there's a video game called Citizen Sleeper, which is a very good game, very very sort of cyberpunky, and they were sort of running a one shot in that using that system, and got that sort of semi Blade stuff, but like lots of more sort of definitely stripped down and like streamlined even more so than your normal sort of game that looks pretty cool. So I, you know, that's out, I think, and they might be getting like a special edition out at Gen Con for the Ennies or something. I'm not sure exactly, but like it's out for Ennies. Go check it out if you haven't already. Maybe go vote for it. If no, by the time you hear this, voting is over. So don't hit that. But maybe it'll win something. Too late. That's pretty cool. And I think second edition Star Trek is coming out in Gen Con if it isn't out already. Star Trek Adventures.
Hmm.
Yes, I know they've sort of been testing it, and so. I believe it's coming. I mean, I was looking it up just a few minutes ago. You can buy it already, so I think it's now-ish that you can come get it. I have the first edition book. I bought it at Gen Con around when it came out. I haven't read it much, I kind of flipped through it. I've been meaning to read it. I even have a source book for it that I haven't, like Sciences Division. I want to get the Lower Decks source book because it's that one, you know, it looks fun. But like, I haven't yet gotten around to playing it or,
all right. You know, and now too late.
People like it. Now too late. It's second edition. I might as well start. Might as well get the second edition and read that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It says launch at Gen Con. So, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I've never actually played or run a Star Trek game, although I didn't get very far into, start running the most Star Trek-y Star Wars game that I think West End Games published back in the day. It was called Dark Strider, but it was like you were the bridge crew of a ship that has going out into deep space. No Jedis, but there was like the Empire has fallen and some strange psionic type tech has been stolen away by some remnants of the Empire, some warlord who's gone off into unknown space. And you're the bridge crew of a fairly large ship the people on it, sometimes they're kind of, you know, sometimes they're skilled, sometimes they're refugees, but they've got their own secrets. You've got your own secrets. And it didn't take too long for everyone to realize this plays a lot more like Star Trek. Strange new, you know, you're visiting strange new worlds and things like that. And so that's the closest I've ever come to a Star Trek type RPG. Is this one still kind of the bridge crew kind of idea?
Yeah. The idea is you're playing the bridge crew in some fashion. You might not be the captain, but you might can be. I'm not 100% sure, but you definitely have like what, you know, division you're a part of is important, I believe. Mm-hmm. Like the science division or the security division or whatever. And you make characters and you do Star Trek things with the Modifius's 2D20 system, which I've heard is good, but I haven't yet given it a try.
That's a 2D20 system that is used by Conan and John Carter and the other. Okay.
And all right. I know the system. The Alien RPG system. No, that might be a different one. Modifius is up to. I know they've got a couple other licenses. I'm very excited. I learned earlier this year that they picked up the Discworld license.
That'd
be fun.
Excited to try that when that comes out, because that's a fun system, a fun setting. Before we started playing this Gundam game, we were playing a Star Trek style game, but it was a completely new, completely homebrew system that you made your bridge crew character, but you also made it a Lower Decks ensign style character for every other player. So this is a game in which we all had about 8 characters. And then you were like, when they were doing something, you were in that scene too, as your Lower Decks character. So we had, it was just chaos. We were doing all sorts of things and you could sacrifice your red shirts basically to get better numbers and stuff like that. It's pretty funny. Yeah. To get stuff done.
It's a little Ars Magica-y, right? Where when you play an Ars Magica campaign, you make your super powerful wizard, but then you also have like your non-magic using bodyguard character. And you also have like your, they call them the grogs or whatever. That's like your common. And sometimes the adventure is just for all the commoners to go do something wizards can't be bothered with. Or
we had done something like that because the bridge crew was stuck in the holodeck.
Oh,
and the holodeck but it was a holodeck of a romantic serial about starship. So that starship captain somehow made her way out into the real world and was captaining our ship. It was a whole big switcheroo.
Oh. Were you running this or playing this?
I was playing it. Yeah.
Okay. I have a lot of faith in you being able to run something kind of zany like that, just having been through Scum and Villainy with you. You've got a lot of skill for having these sorts of things just sort of pop up and get sort of progressively like what the heck more.
I mean,
things go on.
You got to do. You got to like got to ramp it up. Got to ramp it up a little bit and keep pushing when you can. When things are, if you're not running something that's already written and you can just go buck wild. That's what I like to do.
Very cool. You know, I was looking when Jason mentioned this topic, I went to look to see what other kind of games, board games and stuff were being released at Gen Con that were kind of sci-fi-ish. And I came across a couple of them. One of them that looked kind of interesting. It's called This Game is Killer. You were Ooh. a crew on a spaceship, and there's a xenomorph. I don't know if it's the alien xenomorph, but there's a xenomorph, and you're trying to survive. And it's kind of a co-op slash competitive thing, because everybody's trying to survive, but you get some additional bonuses if you do better than others, I guess. So, but you know, so kind of like a, almost like a, an escape room, but with the stakes a bit higher in the space.
Feels very Among Us, right?
Yeah.
Like right, I will eject this person on the hopes that they are the imposter.
Well, that's, I mean, it's not, it doesn't look like it's an imposter. It's just a survival. There's an alien.
Yeah, being just a survival thing.
The car, the game or whatever, right? Yeah. And, yeah. And it will kill you.
Oh, not pretending to be.
No.
Not like the thing. The thing would be like,
well, what you're talking about. Well, got thrown off by the morph at the end of Xenomorph, right? That it could change and look like. Yeah. Anyway.
That is interesting. You know what? Hey, that's a good point. Why do they call it the Xenomorph? It doesn't morph into anything.
Well, it doesn't have to be anything, because it starts from that little, the little worm thing, and it grows into the big monstrosis.
There's a sort of like whatever the egg gestates, it takes a little bit of that, like because wasn't there going to be a story about like how one of the xenomorphs came out of a dog and it was more dog shaped than human shaped?
Oh,
you're thinking about? Like, the
I think
thing.
They mixed it. No. I'm thinking, I don't know.
Oh, no, it was the Pod People one with Donald Sutherland. That one had a dog, too. Anyway, there's shifting and adding dogs.
Of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah, that's right. That's a really old one. Well, I remember in one, I think it was actually in the graphic novels of Aliens, they had one where they're, all the animals, like there was a planet and all the animals got infected, cows aliens. And all kinds of things, but the xenomorphs still were just the way they normally are. They weren't really they hadn't really changed, because if you think about it, I mean, it's really, they're just putting an embryo of something in there. It's not really, and it bursts out, right? It's not taking anything other than nutrients from the host.
It's not,
I guess,
taking their DNA.
Yeah, there's a new Aliens movie out coming out. Did you see that?
Yeah. Gosh, what is it called again?
I thought it was like Romulus.
I saw the trailer for that.
No, I think wasn't that an older one?
Romulus, I think. Yeah.
It is Romulus, okay. Okay.
Well, it's the ship they're going to, I think, is Romulus.
Or the ship that they're on. It reminded me a lot of, was a sci-fi horror movie, Pandorum or something like that.
That was kind of weird. Yeah,
several years old. I got those vibes from watching the trailer for the new Aliens movie, but except that there's an alien in it.
Yeah, Alien Romulus. Yeah, and the weird thing is, you know, watching this, it's like everybody who's watching this is seeing these young people going to this thing trying to get an easy score and realizing, don't do that. That's the worst thing you can do. Because there's like, we know exactly what's going to happen now, compared to like, I don't know.
My wife has never seen Alien or Aliens, and so we're going to rectify that with a watch party as soon as she comes back from out of town.
Oh man, I was I saw Alien at the theaters when it came out, and that was like some of the biggest frights I ever had. And you think about it now, it's pretty tame compared to stuff, but it was a pretty hard R when it came out, and it was. What was the year? Was it like, thinking it was 70s, late 70s?
I would have guessed 80? 79. That's my guess. I'm guessing 79.
In 79?
79. Yeah. Good call. Oh.
Yes.
Oh, wait. Oh, maybe that's. No, Alien came out in 79.
The first one, yeah.
Yeah.
You're talking about the second one, weren't you? Or the first one?
I'm talking about the first one when it came out, 79.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a little older than both of you.
Then you were like 11.
I was 14, but still, it was pretty scary.
Okay.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that would have been like one of my, well, that wasn't the first R I saw. When I was really young, we went to the drive-in theaters, and I remember we saw Dawn of the Dead, like the original. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the original black and white. Oh, man, I had nightmares for a long time. I was like 8. I was, you know, of course, you're supposed to be sleeping, right? You watch the early feature, and then your parents watch the late one, and you're supposed to be sleeping.
While the kids sleep in the back of the car or whatever.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, back of the old station wagon. Oh, yeah. Anyway. But, yeah, so so this game is killer. I thought that sounded like a pretty interesting.
That's good.
Kind of co-op-y kind of game that's related.
I may swing by and try that. What else have you seen? And I will say, I did get as far as seeing somebody suggest a Board Game Geek thread about the games coming out at Gen Con. I'm like, oh, that'll be interesting. I wonder what board games are coming out at Gen Con. And it had like 560 entries or something like that. I'm like,
yes.
Oh, I'm, wow. Oh boy, I'm not going to go through all these.
I looked at the best of. I found somebody that had the best of.
Okay, smart. Very smart.
To include a couple. So the next one, that which was on this list, was called From the Moon. Basically, you kind of create workers, you build bases, kind of a build thing, and you save all of humanity is kind of the tagline. And it reminded me a lot of the show For All Mankind, which I really enjoyed.
Can I tell you?
A lot.
That I we recently started watching that, like a week and a half ago. And I'm surprised how much I'm liking it because I wasn't sure how it was going to be. I was, is this going to be dry? Is this just going to be drama? And then, you know, didn't really know that it was an alternate history thing.
Right.
Until I started watching it. Oh, it's great. Oh, and then also that Ronald D. Moore is involved in it from the Battlestar Galactica reboot, which obviously at the beginning seasons were great. But this is, we just watched an episode, literally finished an episode 15 minutes ago.
Are you still season one or?
Season two. We're in season two.
Okay.
And I won't spoil it, but it's like we're near the end. We're like that was like episode 8. And something bad just happened.
Okay.
So we've got to wrap up pretty quick so Jason can watch the.
We won't watch another one tonight. It's too tense to watch more than one of them a night.
Yeah, that's what we did too.
I've heard very good things about it. Is it on Apple TV?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I don't have Apple TV. I think somebody told me that I should wait until season 2 of Severance comes out. Mm-hmm. And then watch all of then they have like an Apple TV list of all the things I'm supposed to watch as soon as I get it. But the first on their list, her list is actually very Severance based. It's Severance season 1, then Severance season 2, and then I think For All Mankind is right after that. Yeah. So,
well, I wasn't sure about watching. I'd seen kind of clips off and on. I thought, it's just kind of this weird moon show or whatever. And then Jason Tondra mentioned that he really, really loved this show.
He loves it, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll try it. And from like the first episode on, we kind of got hooked.
It's gripping. It is definitionally gripping.
Well, it does all those cliffhangers kind of very purposefully. I don't want to say too much. There were some parts later on that I didn't care for as much. But
there's some stuff happening in season 2 that I was afraid was going to happen, and I'm like, I'm afraid, and then it happened, and I'm like, but
you mean like narrative decisions?
Narrative decisions, decisions that I just in general when they happen in any TV show, this could happen in any show really. This particular narrative decision, and I'm like, not into it. Maybe John and I were talking about the same thing.
Yeah, they do a lot of neat stuff that later episodes and seasons even call back to earlier ones, and so there's this play back and forth, and I think the story still stays pretty good towards it. The time jumps is what's weird though.
Yeah.
Every season has
between
like,
season, right?
Yeah, multiple year time jump.
Even in the first season has a time jump in the middle.
Yeah. So that was probably the mid-season finale. So
that seemed I'm at the point where I know absolutely nothing about the show except kind of an overview. Time jumps seem appropriate, right? Because when it comes to the actual sort of space race, things aren't, you know, Hollywood movie instantaneous.
Right.
Like the one they have to do, send the drillers up to the asteroid. I mean, there should be months and months at least, and sometimes years and years where they're like, oh, here's the technology we need. Let's jump 3 years in the future. Oh, now we have the technology that we were just talking about For you, a couple of minutes, but for us, it was years ago, because this kind of thing takes time to develop in any kind of realistic way.
This is sort of semi-related to the show and to For All Mankind and to this podcast. But so I don't know if you're all familiar with the fact that the in our reality, the Pathfinder shuttle is a sort of a test shuttle. It was, at any rate, that didn't go into space. It was just literally just a mock-up, right? But in the show, it's become, they start talking about it. They're, you know, oh, it's going to go up. It's going to be the real thing. You're on the Pathfinder mission, blah, 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 blah. And every time they start talking about that kind of stuff, my brain kind of like clicks in, right? And then one character literally says to the other, to another character, I see that look you get in your eyes when you talk about Pathfinder. And I was like, what? Who, me? Oh, no. Okay, fair enough. No, that's you're talking about space stuff, though, right?
Cut that, you know, GIF, right?
Yeah. I got to do a screenshot of that with the text on. It's pretty fun. What was that game called, John?
From the Moon.
Okay.
Yeah, and
To the Moon is Honeymooners board game, right?
Yes, yes. Right,
that's a little maybe different. A little outdated. The
yeah. I always like the kind of where you construct and build and kind of go forth from the planet. And way back in the day, I played a single person sci-fi game called Reach for the Stars, where you had to explore certain planets, and depending on the qualities of the planet, they were better or worse at, you know, building whatever you needed, and then you could build more ships to go out and conquer. And it's like Command and Conquer in space and something like that. So,
well, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, cool. Have either of you ever played Dead of Winter?
Cool. I played Dead of Winter like 3 days ago.
Oh, really? Well, yeah. Ron, this is for you. Maybe you'll want to go check this out at Gen Con, because Plaid Hat Games is coming out with a new game.
Crossroads game.
Wandering Galaxy.
Oh, which looks pretty sci-fi. They had a fantasy-themed Crossroads game, which I have not yet picked up. I'm more excited about space one.
This one looks like it could be very Starfinder-y from the cover. It's got like turtle people and rabbit people and you know, humans and other sorts of plant-looking people. It looks very sci-fantasy. But that's all I really know about it, honestly, is the name and that it's a Crossroads game. Wandering Galaxy.
Okay. They have a Kickstarter out that's already gotten 128,000 of a 20,000 goal. So for that.
Oh, it's not yet. Oh, I thought it was going to come out at Gen Con.
I don't know. I just.
Oh, well, check it out anyway, and especially Ron, because he likes Dead of Winter.
Sure. I do like that. Yeah. I do have to admit, the Dead of Winter around our house and among our friends, you know, some of our friends, it is, when we talk about a Crossroads game, for people that don't know that, it's a cooperative board game, you know, at least semi-cooperative board game. But at each person's turn, the player that just took their turn, I think, draws sort of this random event card that doesn't necessarily happen, but as soon as it gets triggered by something in the game, you read the text and it's like, here's some difficult decision. A or B. And the very first one of these we drew, the first time that we played it, was, it's a zombie horror survival game about, hey, you know, a big guy named Earl shows up, and he's, if you welcome him as a survivor, you know, people are worried like, hey, guy that big's gonna eat all our food. And so the choice you're given is add a new survivor and get rid of two of your food, or add five food. And we're all like, it's like, we're going to eat Earl? Anyway, so it is known as the Earl game in my household.
Wow. It's a post-apocalyptic survival strategy game. Ages 13
it's
and up.
It's harsh. I played it once or twice, and it is harsh. The fact that you can... There's one little rules element that I was like, oh, if you go outside, you roll this D12, and we have 1 in 12 chance of just dying.
That's period.
And I'm like, that's too much.
Game over, man.
Just your character dies, but everyone else can keep going or whatever. So yeah,
that's right. When everybody starts out with two characters at least, and it's kind of easy to get more. So yeah, the last time we played, I went, literally the first character I have leave the colony, I rolled, I got the little tooth on the D12, and I'm like, all right, I guess my guy's just dead. That's there we go. At least I've completely got somebody else.
Well, speaking of post-apocalyptic games, I'm told there's one starting here sometime after Gen Con at Mock's Boarding House. Have you heard anything about that, Ron?
Yeah, Jason Tundra's looking to start something up. And I know I'm interested, despite being chastised. Apparently he texted sort of a one-sheet PDF about sort of what the game is about to a bunch of people. But not me. My texts don't get PDF, and I don't know whether it's an iPhone, Android thing. That's my suspicion. Mm-hmm. So we had to email it to me and then kind of made a big deal about how he's going to old style email it to me. I'm like, come on. It's not like it was a carrier pigeon or anything like that. But
shoot, he didn't even send me a copy yet.
Well, I got a copy.
Oh, no.
Via email, as it turns out, which is a fine and trusted way to send PDFs.
There's not much technological difference between email and text, honestly.
I don't know.
It's not like people don't use email anymore. It's not like he had to semaphore you at PDF.
Oh. It's true.
Wait a second. I actually got an email from him, but he sent it to a different account.
Oh.
Whoever owns that account is invited to play, John, not you. Is it, Jake Reynolds? That guy sounds pretty cool.
No. but this is kind of, I don't understand. This is True Detective 10 years later. Is that the email? Or no, this is something completely different.
No, you got something else. Running
different games.
Wait, True Detective 10 years later sounds like a really good, I want in that game.
Time is a flat circle, man. Before we started watching For All Mankind, I had this idea of a brief campaign that I don't know who I'm going to run it for exactly, but I want to run about, it's like 1969 and something happens, and basically I want to take the new Cthulhu game, Cthulhu Awakens from Green Ronin, and run a investigate something's up at NASA with Cthulhu in it, you know what I mean, like with Lovecraftian elements and
then
we watch For All Mankind. I'm like, oh, this is perfect, because like on that first episode something happens and it's like they've gone quiet, and I'm like, oh, what if Apollo, it's like, oh, to do with alternate history, what if Apollo 10 landed on the moon first but didn't tell anybody because they came back bad or something, you know.
Mm-hmm. And there's some other points where that same kind of thing would be even more applicable that you'll see in later seasons. So.
Oh, boy. Later seasons. Oh boy. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, let me watch the whole show before I make plan this campaign.
Yes, because there's some real crazy stuff going on, or people going crazy, and I think.
We had a little bit of that.
There. Yeah. Yeah.
Already. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
I just saw another thing that is apparently coming out in Gen Con. But it's an expansion. For a board game called Planet Unknown, which I was playing earlier this year a bunch, and I really liked it. It's this kind of like, what's the word I'm looking for? So you get these polyominoes? Is that how you say that?
Multi-sided dominoes? Sure.
Polymonials. Yeah, polyamorous. Poly... Okay.
No, you know, something. Sometimes it's two squares or sometimes it's four squares or whatever. They're not specifically tetrominoes or whatever. And you're fitting them into a grid. Like, you know, you pick one, you fit it onto your grid, and you're trying to, like, basically explore this planet and maybe turn this part into green and turn this part into mining, whatever. And everyone's sort of doing it for their own planet. Essentially, you know, like whatever one I pick, you can't have, right? That kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's cool. It looks like there's some sort of like, this one's called, this expansion is called Super Moon, which sounds exciting. It looks like there's just more like another board to do or something like that. Salvage stuff from the Super Moon and get different tiles. I don't know. I like tile games. I like tile placement games and shapes.
Cool. I like salvage games.
I'll keep an eye out for that one as well.
Keep an eye out for that one.
So I have Jasper here.
I know. Yeah, hi, Jasper. You're waiting for to tell Mr. Bond no, you expect him to die.
Yes. No, my daughter's in Indonesia, so we're watching her cats, and
That's nice.
This is Jasper. He likes to be up on me all the time. So regardless of whether or not I'm podcasting. So
there you go. Yeah.
So. Life's just one big podcast if you're a cat.
Yes, precisely. Anyway, so that there's a lot of cool stuff coming out this summer. It's like,
sure, yeah,
we're in waiting mode, and then it's all gonna just hit us, and there won't be enough summer left to do it all.
Which means we just do it well, in you don't the have fall,
to,
right?
That's, so we have to keep doing it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, you don't have to do it all over the summer. That's only one more month after Gen Con.
I know. Over. Yes, yes,
that's good. We'll wait the whole year.
It'll be exciting. But circling back, I'm very excited for the second edition playtest and all the great adventures that Jason Keeley has already offered to run for us in our Intrepid Heroes.
So I'm just going to run the adventures that are coming out for the playtest.
Okay.
So yes, they'll be great. They'll be great, but don't.
Walking it back.
No. Well. We'll see. Well, you know what we'll see. But I all definitely the great want to run playtest play adventures.
And then when that real adventures come out, then Jason will run the real adventures as well.
Maybe those, yes.
Yeah, see? So we got we got him locked up for 3 years now. That's it.
Oh, no.
I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. I think that I'm, you know, my excitement for it is now overcome my trepidation of, oh, man, if I spend all this sort of mental bandwidth learning a playtest rule set, then I've got to unlearn lots of little tiny things when the rules come out in a year. So maybe I don't bother with the playtest, but I can't. I knew at the time I was saying that, I'm like, not bother with the playtest. Ron, don't you know yourself? Come on. And yeah, I'm now my excitement has overcome any sort of concern I might have. So I'm eager to play.
I don't think there'll be. I think, as you said, there will be small changes. I don't think there will be any major shifts as a result of, you know, feedback from the playtest. So I think, I think that's fortunate, you know, that they've got a pretty solid game engine from Pathfinder 2nd Edition to base things on, and then it's just going to be really kind of tweaking the individual parts of that. So.
And for, you know, there's all these other little things to have to, like, learn for the remaster of 2nd Edition Pathfinder, right? Mm-hmm.
That's actually
little changes here and there.
A bigger getting thing to be a little bit,
yes. Yeah. Like, but all, you know, Starfinder 2nd Edition, even the playtest is sort of more built even on the remaster. So, like,
right,
all those quality of life tweaks are already there.
So it'll be reactive strike, not opportunity attack or attack of opportunity. Or
if that, there's even that, yeah.
I am interested. I have to say, from a game design perspective, whether or not they hew to the complexity of Pathfinder 2nd Edition very rigorously, or whether Starfinder 2nd Edition is just a little bit more streamlined or a little bit more complex, right? Which side are they going to fall on? Or are they going to try to walk a middle balance where they are exactly as complex?
I would say somewhere in the middle, because, you know, with the intent of, like, saying, hey, you can use these elements in either game, you know, take a Pathfinder 2nd Edition ancestry and play it in Starfinder 2nd Edition, then they'll will kind of perforce need to be about the same complexity.
Kind of lock it together. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these will be two jigsaw pieces that can fit together if you want them to. But like all jigsaw puzzles, you don't have to put them together. You could just hold the pieces separate and look at them and admire them individually. You know, like you do with jigsaw puzzles.
Like one does with jigsaw. Wait, nobody does with jigsaw.
No, okay. What?
Just you, Jason. Just you.
I've been doing jigsaws all wrong all this time. No one's told me that I can't just look at the, I have to do something with these pieces? Are you kidding me?
The truth is, that's not true.
Beautiful art, though. Podcast, yes.
I can look at it's on the box. Look at the art on the box.
Like, why do I put the picture together? The picture's right there.
The picture's right there. I can look at the pieces individually and imagine what's around them. What was that?
All right. Well, with that, we will close.
Okay.
I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this has been Digital Divination.